Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 17th of September 2017. My name is TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Alison, Traffic Light Theatre Goer, and Paul in London. We're now going to talk about King Lear at Shakespeare's Globe. This production is directed by Nancy Meckler, with designed by Rosanna Vise. They have gone in this production for a... Well, at first, it starts off that you seem to have a group of homeless or immigrant people turning up at some kind of derelict structure. The Globe stage is covered in polythene, and there are these bulk package trolleys knocking around. And they take all that down and begin to put on a play, the play being King Lear. This production stars Kevin McNally as King Lear, Anjana Vasson as Cordelia, Saskia Reeves plays Kent, Bert Caesar plays Gloucester, Joshua James is Edgar, Ralph Davis is Edmund, Emily Bruni is Goneril, Thomas Padden is Albany, her husband, Serene Sabar plays Regan, and Faz Singate plays Cornwall. We also have Lauren O'Dare playing The Fool, and Chris Nyack playing Oswald, and the rest of the cast are Kenton Thomas, Louisa Beadle, and Buam Tingang. After the initial bit where they're all homeless, it does kind of settle down into a fairly straightforward production. It is fairly modern dress, but there's no real comeback to that initial invasion of the homeless picture that we got. It does settle down to something fairly standard, straightforward King Lear. I mean, obviously there are some gender changes, you know, Saskia Reeves coming in as Kent, and I think she does it extremely well. One of the slight mysteries for some people, I felt, and reading some of the reviews, is Kevin McNally. He tends to be known these days kind of more as his character from maybe the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, but also this sort of rather nice guy. But also with Kevin McNally, there's always been, if you go back over his CV, there's always been sort of two Kevin McNallys. There's either this rather pleasant, avuncular type of person, but he can also play total psychopaths. I think there was the TV series Spooks. He played a very memorable character in that who did horrible things to one of the stars. I think it involved a fish fryer. And he can play, you know, this very nasty, almost psychopathic person. So he has these, what you might think of as two modes. I mean, it's much more than that, because he is a very versatile actor. And I think this may have, when it was announced, people who know him from Pirates of the Caribbean or some of the nicer roles he plays weren't really ready for him to be able to produce something which is powerful and a really good, convincing King Lear performance. I wasn't so worried, and I think in this production he is extremely good, because I've seen him for years, you know, even going back as far as I, Claudius, back in the 70s. He is an immensely versatile actor and always a very interesting actor to see, and he really inhabits, I think, King Lear really well. And he's had a lot of the madness from the start. Some people are comparing him, because Ian McKellen is having another go at King Lear at Chichester at the moment. They're comparing the two, but I think Kevin McNally might not be the great verse speaker that Ian McKellen is, but he's certainly a very interesting and an actor very worthwhile watching in everything he does, and especially in this. It hasn't really gone for what quite a lot of the other plays at the Globe have gone for this year, and you know, really trying to change things up and really trying to play with the space and play with lighting. It is a fairly standard production, I felt, and it's no worse for that. I mean, they have made a few mistakes, I think, this year at the Globe. You know, the Romeo and Juliet, I think, didn't work for people, and maybe the Twelfth Night wasn't strong enough, but I think this production, it gets it right and gives us a very good version of the play. We have some very nice performances in here. I'll pick out a few. Bert Caesar as Gloucester did some very good work. We have a very good Edgar in Joshua James, I felt, you kind of believe this, the sort of unlikely thing of him suddenly becoming Poor Tom, and everybody around suddenly recognizes him as Poor Tom, although he's only been Poor Tom for about, oh, I don't know, 24 hours, maybe a bit more. I think one of these things has never quite makes sense in King Lear, but he suddenly makes you understand it, and he's a very interesting and sympathetic figure. Also, like seeing Emily Bruni, who I haven't seen enough of recently, coming in as Goneril, very frosty, very strong, although she's a little bit thawed when she begins her relationship with Edmund. I thought she was a strong presence in this play. As I say, it's a very decent production. I'm going to stop short of saying great, but I found it a very rewarding watch, and I think a lot of people have been very impressed by this. What did you think about it, Alice?
In essence, I actually agree with you. I thought it was a very brisk and an admirably clear production. As you say, it starts off when this group of could be homeless or could be even people who are coming into squat, but then they turn into an almost continental style acting troupe. And they take down the keeper out that's daubed on and he's nailed up doors of the stage designed by Rosanna Vise and lay out their shabby suitcases and sort of zip up their wind cheaters and pull down their beanies and also their, you know, their baseball caps. It's a very neat production, I mean, I felt. And this is reflected in Kevin McNally and his performance. It struck me that when he first comes in, he's got it's not quite a military uniform, but it's almost a military uniform. Almost like he's some kind of corporate man who's playing at the military and he drinks vodka shots. And he seems to have this kind of fashion choice of freshly laundered clothes and an iron jacket and trousers in khaki brown and beige. And you have these crates which the daughters stand on in that first scene where the father addresses them, asking how much they love him. The fool, in fact, is played in quite a delicate way as a Pierrot musician played by Lauren O'Dare, and she plays the violin. So again, there's this kind of continental mime feel to it, Pierrot feel to it. As you say, there is a gender swap with the Duke of Kent, who becomes Our Lady of Kent, and it's played very well by Saskia Reeves. It really works. It doesn't feel like a token gesture at all, and she's this, at first, a bespectacled, she's a very sensible kind of woman politician in a white jacket and a skirt and a blouse and a sensible court shoes, and she's holding book of accounts or maybe a book of land deeds, and it works very, very well. Cordelia is quite interestingly done by Anjana Vazan as well. I think the costuming for her, first of all, it's as if she's stepped out of some, I don't know, 15th or 16th century painting, and she's got this very high-waisted white robe with silver adornments. And then when she's brought low, when she doesn't flatter her father like her sisters, this is all ripped off and she has this kind of plain slip of a dress, but it's almost like you're also passing through time and she's suddenly in the 1960s. It's a very solid, it's a very vigorous production, very, very clear verse speaking. Again, as you said, I think very decent. It's nothing outstanding. It did get a bit laboured with the use of the kind of warehouse goods container, I felt, at times, where they had to go in and out. But it did bring out quite a bit of humour as well. I mean, when Saskia Reeves as the loyal Kent, when she's disguised, she answers the question, "How now? What art thou?" And she answers, "A man, sir." Well, obviously, being a woman, this raised a laugh which isn't normally there. I was as well. I really liked Joshua James, who's a kind of loose-limbed, scampering Edgar, And as you've said, I felt the transformation was very good, both as when he became this kind of lunatic vagrant that disguise and becomes, quite low down and dirty. And he really got the sympathy of the audience, I felt as well. And then at the end, very credibly, when he transformed himself into a thoughtful statesman. On the whole, I did feel it was sometimes a little bit too clean and laundered. It worked as far as it went, but I felt like it could have maybe been pushed a little bit more. I did wonder whether, because I believe it's going to be broadcast, and I could see it working very, very well in close up with the kind of colours that they were using as well. And I have a feeling it might come out as a more exciting production, maybe on screen, than it does on stage. But all in all, I think the sisters, the other two sisters, as you say, Goneril and Emily Bruni's Goneril and Serene Saba's black-haired Regan, more voluptuous, and the two sisters competing for Edmund, the Gloucester Bert Caesar's illegitimate son. That worked extremely clearly, and in all, it was a good, clear, solid production, which, and I think it's the last Shakespeare of the season, I think it was altogether a very creditable production.
We're now going to talk about Doubt at the Southwark Playhouse. This is John Patrick Shanley's 2004 play about a school run by nuns in 1964, St. Nicholas Church School in the Bronx, what the Americans call an elementary school, because they're all looking forward to moving on to high school a little bit later. There is a priest to, we mostly focus on the headmistress, and who is rather traditional nun, although she has come to the nunhood slightly late and has been married in the past, and it's pretty clear that her husband died, I think, in the war, and she comes slightly later in life as a result, and she is worried about a young boy. He's a young African-American boy who she suspects the priest, who has to look after various aspects of the school, and she suspects the priest might have had an inappropriate relationship with him. She is not absolutely sure, and we're never sure what that relationship is, and she's never sure, and it is that doubt that we get. The priest, Father Flynn, is somewhat progressive. I think we're just after, well, I think it's known as Vatican II, which is the big reforms that were done under Pope John the 23rd. So she is a little bit old school, and he has embraced these changes. Paul, can you tell me more about this play and what you think of it?
Thanks, Tim. Yes, I was familiar with this piece thanks to the 2008 movie Doubt, which starred Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman and Amy Adams in this piece. And it was a terrific movie. And it was actually John Patrick Shanley who wrote the play. He also did the movie adaptation and directed it. But it's actually one of the things that surprised me by sitting and watching this very sharp and focused piece that runs for 90 minutes at the Southwark Playhouse, is that actually taking away all the cinematic effects and things like that, you've still got this brilliant piece of writing that actually is, as the title of the play says, it's a parable. And there's a hint in the actual piece as to maybe what Shanley's thinking about when Father Flynn's character explains his preference for parables over real life, as the truth makes for a bad sermon. And it's interesting because as you watch this piece, you cannot help but think about all the sex scandals that have happened in the Catholic Church. Nothing about this is ever mentioned in the entire piece. And actually, one of the clevernesses of the writing is that actually it's merely just hinted at, because it dare not, no one dare mentions it or would dare accuse a priest in this period of doing such a thing. And so it's all really in the minds of the audience about the horror of what you think may or may not have happened. But the other part of this piece, though, is how wonderful it is that actually this allegation is really part of a much bigger scene setting about the changes that are happening at that time, the changes being Vatican II, or just general changes in morality, even switching from a cartridge pen to a ballpoint pen as the fashion and technology has improved. And basically, this it's really a piece between the much more traditional Sister Aloysius, who's played here by Stella Gonet, and she's the head of a grade school and the principal, and she's convinced that Father Flynn, who's played here by Jonathan Chambers, is just wrong for the school and that there's something wrong about him. And what that wrong is that there's an inappropriate relationship that he's had with a boy in her school. To complicate things further is that the boy, Donald Muller, is the only black child in school. And I think it's interesting that the whole piece then sets the scene for this fight between a traditionalist and a modernizer, and against also what could be a potentially horrific allegation as well. And actually, the verbal sparring between the two actors, between Gonet and Chambers, is just where this piece really ignites your attention. I think it's quite a fiery piece, but actually the characters are particularly well-rounded, so nobody's presented as a monster. I think one of the things that's also interesting in this piece is Sister Aloysius could have been, you know, your typical nun-principal nightmare horror story, you know, an archetype of character. But actually here, you know, there's enough characterization and shade given to her to make you realize that actually she's not a monster in any sense of the word. She's just really fighting for what she believes is right. And similarly, Father Flynn's character, he's also talking about, you know, wanting to modernize, wanting to be part of people's families and to be a part of life. There's two other actors in this piece. They're also worth a mention. I think the younger nun, Sister James, who's played here by Claire Latham, she's much more of a mousy character, and she's terrifically portrayed here as, you know, wanting earnest and wanting to teach the world and slowly being darkened and by the much harsher realities that Sister Aloysius wants her to look at, and basically to sow doubt into her, you know, very optimistic and what could be considered as naive sort of view on the world. But then on the complete opposite end of the spectrum is Donald Mueller's mother, who's played here by Joan Martin. And, you know, there's a confrontation between the mother and Sister Aloysius when she's talking to her about, you know, what could have happened with Father Flynn. And what's actually fascinating here is that she is even more world-weary. She's much more acknowledges the true state of the world than even Sister Aloysius. And what actually comes from this sort of encounter, without giving away too much, is a realization about the power, race, class, and even sexuality relationships that are coming into play here. And actually, her character is quite a fascinating one, and I think it was well portrayed by Joan Martin. It's a minimalist production, this one. It's set in the round in the Southwark Playhouse. You kind of walk in, and it feels like you're coming into church, because there's, you know, the stained glass windows, there's a smell of incense that pervades the air. The night I went, there didn't seem to be the audience that this piece deserved, and actually it made me feel like, well, hell, it's even more like a church in this day and age. But having said that, you know, I think it's a terrific production. If anything, I kind of wished that maybe it was a little bit more structure to the piece, and actually they decided to stage it a little bit more imaginatively using a few sets and props, because actually the script at times does call for it, and it does feel like it's a reading at times. But, you know, that's a minor quibble. I think overall this is a terrific piece. It's a great play, but the cast really bring out the best in it, and it made me want to go back and watch the film. But actually I think, having seen now the film again after watching the play, I still think the play leaves you with a much stronger impression, and I think that's a testament to this production.
I found it rather good. I mean, it's a very quality performance. It's always nice to see Stella Gonet, and also she's a bit of a favourite, Claire Latham, so it's always interesting to see good performances like that. It is very good. The problem with it is, of course, the whole thing of the child abuse, the stuff that has really blown up and was even there back in 2004 when this was written. But I think it's much more prevalent, and once the accusation is in your head, it's very difficult to believe that it's not true. And I didn't think that Father Flynn in this was quite convincing enough, made me question his guilt or innocence enough, and that gave me a slight problem here, because I think we're meant never to know whether the allegations are true. And of course, Sister Aloysius, she does tend to sabotage herself in the way she goes about things, so that we are never given the absolute truth of what happened here. And that is, I think, the point of the play. You know, we are not supposed to know, but it is a little bit frustrating, even after this, that you never quite know what has gone on and who is guilty and what terrible thing may or may not have happened and the way that people are complicit. And it just feels that I kind of needed a little bit more than that, I think.
But you needed closure.
Yeah, I think so. I needed certainty. And unfortunately, you know, with a play called Doubt, you can hardly ask for certainty, can you? So yes. I think I was asking for what the play was not willing to give. But I mean, it is very well done and it is very well written. And I think rather well staged, if a little minimalist. I have a feeling they were miming the props a lot of the time, which was a bit off-putting sometimes, but didn't really detract from the whole, which is a good play. So I hope it does get an audience. I think it's had reasonable reviews for this. So
it has had terrific reviews. But another person that was there on Tuesday night when I saw it, we were both saying, well, we're going to spread the word. But it was sad to see that such a terrific play and with such great performances just wasn't getting the audience it deserved. Maybe people don't like plays about religious subject matter, but I don't know. But I think the interesting thing about this piece is it doesn't give you the satisfaction of knowing what happened, but the actual fact that there was an allegation just completely colours your whole perception of the whole piece and whether the priest may or may not have acted in the interests of the child. It's an interesting thing to think about. And then what also happens to him at the end is quite telling, because actually you realize that in that day and age, priests did move around and, you know, that was quite a common thing to happen. Whether it still happens, that's perhaps also part of the interesting discussions that happen after seeing the play, is whether you can still have doubt around whether there are enough safeguards today so things like that wouldn't happen. But no, all told, I think this is a terrific show.
We're now going to talk about Talk Radio at the Old Red Lion Theatre in Islington. This is Eric Boghossian's play from 1987. It was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize and later made into a movie starring Eric Boghossian and directed by Oliver Stone. It is produced here by the same team that gave us the early Arthur Miller play No Villain, which did quite a good job back a few years ago. It's directed by Sean Turner, designed by Max Dory, and it stars Matthew Dewar as the shock jock Barry Champlain. He's a no-nonsense talk show host who talks at his audience and insults them and upsets them and gets them all riled up. Together with Matthew Dewar are Molly McNerney, Andy Secombe, Sel Spellman and George Turvey. What has happened is that Barry Champlain, who is based in Cleveland, he is up for syndication. A major radio company are looking at syndicating his shock jock show nationally, and this particular show is kind of audition. They're making the decision. And, you know, he's a bit of a drunk, he doesn't care, he's having kind of an on-off affair with one of the researchers on the show, and he doesn't seem to be all that happy with what he's doing. He drinks too much, he's obviously not a particularly nice person in his private life, and he's a bit of an enigma. The name Barry Champlain is an assumed name, and throughout the show gets these occasional people coming in and threatening to kill him. I think that's something that isn't resolved in the play, although I think they resolve it in the movie. This actual play is based a little bit on the murder of a shock jock, a journalist called Alan Berg, who was a talk show host in Denver who was murdered by white supremacists. So I think that we are meant to think that something nasty might happen, and in fact I did think that's what was going to happen in this. I certainly, because I kind of knew about the film, the Oliver Stone film, and I thought that we were going to get a lot more threat. And really, it's just people ringing in and him sort of insulting them or encouraging them or talking to them. You're never entirely sure where he stands, whether he's sort of right-wing or libertarian or an ultra-liberal or something like that. He's a little bit all over the shop with what he talks about. He sort of is very slippery, and he's really whatever it takes to rile people up and annoy them a lot of the time, although he does scare his bosses by some of the outrageous things he says. And also his ability to pick people, you know, knowing whether or not somebody's a fake, knowing whether or not somebody's making stuff up. So he can dive between being sympathetic and unsympathetic in this. And he seems to be having a bit of a battle with his main engineer, although it's not entirely resolved why they're so angry at him. I mean, you can see why the young woman's angry at him, but not sure why his main producer's angry at him. We're watching the main show that he's doing, and occasionally we get a little bit of a breakout where three of the characters talk directly to the audience about what they think of Barry Champlain, and they acknowledge how good he is and how much people love to listen to him and they love to be annoyed by him, but they may not particularly like him in what he does. But it's a very powerful performance, I think, by Matthew Shure as Barry Champlain. It's very clever and nicely structured. You are thinking that something terrible is going to go wrong, especially when he invites in a fan who's earlier tried to spoof the radio show. He invites the fan in and really gets bored. He seems to be bored with everything. Although he might turn out to be a success at the end, you can't tell whether he's, you know, destroying himself in what he's doing at the same time, whether this constantly being argumentative and constantly being against everybody is really damaging him. I think it's a fascinating play, and I thought it was quite rewarding. What did you think about it, Paul?
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, actually, there's so much to take in about this piece. Actually, it was funny you mentioned, too, that you thought something bad was going to happen. I actually thought throughout the entire piece that something does horribly go wrong towards the end. So I'm sitting on the edge of my seat throughout the whole piece thinking it's going to end up in a slasher type massacre. Thankfully, the ending is a little bit subtler than that. And, you know, it's Barry Champlain's his own breakdown is really what's happening here on the brink of success. But, you know, there's nothing like going into a theatre thinking you're going to see something, and it just, you know, keeps your heart racing. But this production, it looks, once again, at the Old Red Lion, they managed to transform the space into something incredible. It's like a step back in time to the 80s, and they've just completely created this radio studio with all the, down to the horrible coffee cups and the swivel chairs and, you know, the 8-track cassette things. And, you know, it's actually just a terrific looking production. It actually makes you do a double take when you walk in there. And then also the other cleverness about, you know, setting the piece in the 80s is they've matched the look of it with the actors, and, you know, they've all got this terrific 80s style haircuts. But you're sitting there watching this piece, you kind of think it's a bit of a forerunner, or you could foretell what was going to happen to the world, about, you know, where everybody's angry, everybody rants, and we're now in a world where everybody can, you know, talk crap on a whole different range of mediums, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, or, you know, 4,000 word opinion pieces in the Telegraph.
Or podcasts.
Yes, or podcasts, even like ourselves. But at least we have nice things to say for the most part. Whereas, you know, here he's got these characters of misfits, and, you know, there's some terrific voiceovers that are also done through this piece, because actually a lot of this piece is the main character listening to callers dialing in, and there's some great voiceover artists as well. I think in some productions they're sitting backstage, but I'm assuming that in this one they're pre-recorded. It's a fascinating production. I'm glad to, you know, 30 years on, we've got a chance to see it. I never saw the Oliver Stone film, but that was also part of when this piece first landed. It was quite a sensation, and so there was a film adaptation shortly after. But it's quite interesting to, you know, just sort of look at, you know, how what was seen back in the 80s is quite, you know, a shock jock. It's quite tame by standards today, where nowadays, you know, being provocative is really the essential part of being a radio host, and being sacked is just a stepping stone to going on to something bigger or better, or getting a book deal or a television show. So I think it's a well-done piece. It's quite interesting, too, the pacing of this, because actually, as you mentioned, they cut out to the supporting characters who each talk about how they worked with Barry and being able to has basically given him his shot at success. But the thing that I think the most memorable part is when one of these callers, or one of his biggest fans, rings up and actually gets invited into the studio. And he's this dopey teenager who is a bit high on drugs, and he's played hilariously by Sel Spellman, and it's quite hilarious. And actually it's quite interesting that this character seems to be the one that actually tips him over the edge to kind of realize, you know, Barry hates his life, he hates everything he does, and he hates the fact that people like this guy think he's really amazing. And so it's quite interesting. It's a really difficult character, I think, to make sympathetic, but, you know, Matthew Dewar really does quite a lot with this, particularly with the changing moods and the pauses. And the fact in this, you know, this fantastic set of a radio studio booth, you know, he's there, he's kind of feels like he's this caged animal that, you know, wants to just break out but doesn't know where to go. So I think, you know, this is yet another fantastic little production at the Old Red Lion, and it's a pity that it concluded last night. It might transfer, you know, in the future somewhere else similar to Mrs. Orwell, yes.
Or indeed, No Villain.
Yeah.
Because that went into the West End, yeah.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the Azeta named London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com. The podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.